You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farad.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Coming up tonight after 7, it's True Stories Told Live on the Moth Radio Hour. Tonight, professional gambler Annie Duke details a pivotal poker game at the televised Tournament of Champions. And road rage lands a new mom in jail. That and more tonight after 7 here on the Ideas Network.
First, Kate, let's play a quick game. I will say a word. You tell me if it's a prescription drug or a science fiction planet. Ready?
Uh-huh.
Remeron.
Okay, don't take it.
Drug or planet?
I'm going to go with drug.
It is a tetracyclic antidepressant approved by the FDA in 1996. Remulac, Conehead's planet from the famous Saturday Night Live skit.
So how do drug companies come up with the alien-sounding product names that end up on pharmacy shelves?
Susan Scooty joins us now with the story. She's a CNN health writer. Susan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob. I'm happy to be here.
You've written on this. I used to work at a pharmacy, and I did have a game, Star Wars Planet or Prescription Drug. Can you give us a bit of the history on how drugs came to get their names?
Well, I mean, I think most of us would imagine that drugs have been around for a long time, since midwives and medicine men mixed tree roots and other substances. They probably named their drugs in some sort of way. But in more recent times, drug naming was like the domain of pharmaceutical companies. Judging from what I can tell, they based their names on the chemical formulations. For example, Bayer's aspirin, a product created in 1899, is based on the chemical acetylsalicylic acid. So aspirin, acetylsalicylic, it sort of makes sense. But by the end of the century, by the end of the 20th century, names started to, I think Madison Ave was responsible for new trends in naming. That was around David Wood was a pioneer in the field of branding. And according to Arlene Tech, a drug namer, he was a visionary because he saw brand naming as a wholly separate discipline and business on its own. And he is someone who began to market services of simply naming products. And that entered into pharma. Around the early 1990s, he's responsible for naming Prozac.
Mm.
You know, over time, the name shifted into, in the 90s, they were pretty much descriptive. You know, for instance, Wellbutrin is a drug from that time that suggests wellness. Flomax, as Scott Piergrossi, who's another drug namer, as he put it, Flomax, you don't have to guess what Flomax does. but basically, then they shifted from functionality. Scott Piergrossi said that in the 2000s, we developed more Latinized drug names like Lucenta, Lipitor. Then in 2010, they began to become even more novel and strange. For instance, Xiidra. XIIDRA is an embalming product which is spelled XII, uncommon letters.
Needs a pronunciation in all advertising.
Yes. So basically, Kate, you know, like over time, you know, they migrated away from functionality and sort of recognizable names towards more exotic sounds simply because there was such a backlog of names that they had to get more and more obscure and bizarre to get the FDA to approve them.
And Prozac, as you mentioned at the outset, was really a turning point. It really hit everything. Why was Prozac such a key name in the pivotal moment in drug naming?
I think it is because of David Wood. He's just everybody I spoke to mentioned him as just this you know, as I said, visionary. He just saw naming as an entirely separate art form aside from marketing, and that was his baby. It meant, as Scott Piergrossi said, it meant nothing, and yet, you know, it had a good sound and people liked it. Obviously, it's an antidepressant. Maybe it was sort of uplifting. our John Fidelino, who I also spoke with, he said, you know, it took a whole condition out of the shadows. People didn't want to talk about depression, but Prozac allowed them to do that. So I think that's part of what a good name does, is it elevates the product and the condition at once.
We're talking to Susan Scudi, CNN health writer, looking at how prescription drugs get those weird science fictional names. Susan, if I invent a candy bar or design a car, I can name it whatever I want. It can all be the marketing. If I design a drug, the FDA gets to weigh in on the name. What kind of things might they shoot down a proposed prescription name for?
Okay. The FDA is all about safety. The division that works on the names is called Division of Medication Error Prevention and Analysis. So that sort of tells you everything. Their goal is that we do not, that a name is unique enough, it doesn't look alike or sound alike any other drug, and cause confusion. There are so many points of confusion, after all. Your primary care physician telling a nurse, you know, the nurse practitioner to write up a script for X drug. They don't want to say they don't want a name that can easily be confused by another one. There's another aspect of why the FDA might shoot a drug name down is brand names cannot include groups of letters known as stems that generic names must include to signal what class of drug they are. So there's all sorts of odd little two-letter, three-letter, and four-letter configurations that cannot be included in a name. OS, for instance, that cannot appear within a brand name ever. The FDA also reserves the right to nix names for seeming too fanciful, or if they stigmatize a patient or the condition, or if they overstate a drug's effectiveness. So based on all that, the FDA is killing about 40% of names that are even handed into it.
A lot of rejection out there. So there's the chemical name, and then there's room for making room for the generic name before you get to the brand name. So how does the generic name factor into all of this?
Yeah, the generic name is not ultimately the company when a drug is known by three names. Its chemical name, its generic name, and its brand name. The chemical name is based on the molecular structure of the drug, and that's chemistry. So that's not exactly, the scientific name is not exactly a name, is not exactly something we would say is named. It's really just described. The United States Adopted Name Council proposes a generic name, which has to be approved by the International Non-Proprietary Name Program run by the World Health Organization, so that all throughout the world, a generic drug is one and the same. So there's no confusion there. So really, the company then only works on the brand name, which is all about trademarking and marketing.
And as I understand it from your writing, the prescription drug company in itself may not be the one who comes up with a name. They outsource it to these naming experts, often at one particular company.
Yes. It's a whole niche in the advertising market. As you mentioned, Pierre Grossi said of his company is Brand Institute. He says 75% of names come through his door, but when he says that, it means that in some form or another, sometimes the services of naming can be small. For instance, a company may want to sort of name it in-house, but then they'll use one of these smaller advertising agencies, these boutiques, to run a focus group or to just help with what do doctors think of this name, or to tweak it slightly. So it's, even though that quote is kind of, even though that seems high, that the Brand Institute is working on 75% of all names, it seems to me that a lot of pharmaceutical companies divvy up this work among different boutiques and, you know, work with them to find what they think of as the best name possible. So I think a lot of them, the work is so specialized, I sort of strayed from your question, but because the FDA has so many constraints and regulations and naming is very difficult, that's why this whole industry of smaller ad agencies developed.
Is naming so difficult because they are so concerned about medical errors and about getting lookalikes and soundalikes where that could lead to a medical error, an overdose?
Yeah, definitely. With 1.5 million Americans, with almost half of American adults taking at least one prescription drug in any given month, about 1.5 million Americans are sick and injured or killed by errors in prescribing, dispensing, and taking medications, according to the Institute of Medicine. So the whole idea is we got to get the name straight because it's just so easy to make an error.
So Susan, as we wrap up, is there a concern that as more and more drugs go on the market, we're going to hit peak name and run out of combinations of Z's, Q's, and X's that can pass FDA muster?
But none of them said that to me. Namers are the most unique bunch of people I think I've ever interviewed. I mean, they are just the trippiest, funniest people. They are they both reverse engineer and, you know, they're both creative and yet highly technical people. They seem to think there's an endless supply of combinations, letter combinations they can come up with. So, I mean, I put my faith in them, and I think everything should be fine. But they have all sorts of, they've broken it down into, like, bizarre letter abstractions. I mean, to them, it's no longer even words so much as letters that they're looking at and working at. And they look at each of them has their favorite names of, you know, and they've come up with them, you know, by combining words, combining letters, just doing what they do.
We'll leave it there. Susan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Kate and Rob.
That was Susan Scudi, CNN health writer. She shared the story of the complicated and mysterious process of naming new prescription drugs.